here to talk about the National Healthcare Disparities Report and why certain measurement problems in that report precluded from providing useful information about changes in healthcare disparities over time. The first slide provides some of the background of the National Healthcare Disparities Report. It's a yearly report mandated by Congress. Three have been issued so far, and a 2007 report will issue shortly, I understand. The report covers both healthcare processes and health outcomes. In my abstract, I stated that the process outcomes are usually measured in terms of relative differences in favorable outcomes, that is, receipt of prenatal care in the first trimester, for example. In fact, however, all or almost all disparities are measured in terms of relative differences in adverse outcomes. In the case of processes, that means that it's measured in rates of the failure to receive certain types of care. Also, whereas my abstract discusses the requirement that relative and absolute differences must move in the same direction to be counted as a change over time, that aspect of it was in the 2005 report and has been abandoned in the 2006 report. But these differences from my abstract have little bearing on my central point here, which involves the problems with using dichotomous variables to measure changes in disparities over time. The crucial failing of the NHDR methodology for appraising the size of a disparity is that it fails to recognize that all measures of differences between two groups' rates of experiencing or avoiding some outcome tend to change in certain ways solely as a result of changes in the prevalence of an outcome. Without recognizing or an attempt to account for these tendencies, it is not possible to draw meaningful conclusions about changes in health or healthcare disparities over time. Further, under the approach whereby all disparities are measured in terms of relative differences in adverse outcomes, as healthcare improves and favorable outcomes become more common, healthcare disparities will be perceived to be increasing. The next slide describes the way four measures of differences between rates change as the prevalence of an outcome changes from being very rare to being almost universal. First, relative differences in experiencing the outcome tend to decrease. Relative differences in failing to experience the outcome tend to increase. Absolute differences initially increase, then decline. Differences measured in odds ratios initially decline, then increase. I'm going to attempt to graphically illustrate these tendencies. This is not an easy thing to do in a few minutes, so in the next slide I provide a list of references in case any of you come away puzzled or unpersuaded by what I say here. Let's see, the Health Disparities Measurement tab on my website contains more than 60 discussions of these tendencies and their bearing on the interpretation of data on group differences in the law and the social and medical sciences. Section D includes more than 40 recent online responses to various journal articles explaining the problems with the effort in each article to compare the size of health or healthcare disparities in different settings. Items D23, 40, and 41 specifically discuss the disparities report. I'll shortly add another comment relating to a 2005 Health Affairs article on the disparities report, expanding somewhat on the points I make here. But the points made in these comments could be made with respect to thousands of other articles. In fact, could be made with respect to virtually every effort to compare the size of health disparities at different points in time, in different places, or among different populations. Thus, the points I make here about the Healthcare Disparities Report could be made about almost every study of health or healthcare disparities. And I urge anyone interested in studying health disparities to read a few of these papers listed here. All are available on my website. And I suggest it would not be worthwhile to come away simply thinking they raise some interesting issues. For really, unless you conclude that the points I make are entirely wrong, you'll have to approach health disparities research in a way materially different from the way it's generally been done. The tendencies I have listed can be illustrated with almost any data set that allows one to examine various points on a continuum of two groups' distributions of factors associated with experiencing or avoiding some outcome. The next slide simply sets out the specifications for a hypothetical illustration. Basically, it's based on two groups with normal distributions where the advantage group, AG, has a mean that is half a standard deviation higher than the mean of the disadvantaged group, which I term DG. Figure 1, the numbers along the bottom, which are used as benchmarks for overall prevalence of some outcome, show the proportion of the advantage group that falls above each point. In other words, the success rate or favorable outcome rate for the advantage group. You can think of each point as representing a cutoff on a paper and pencil test, and consider moving from left to right as reflecting the lowering of the cutoff on the test, such as to serially enable the population between each point to pass the test. But the patterns shown would also obtain if, instead of lowering the cutoff, we improved test performance to allow everyone between the two points to pass the test at the original cutoff. The blue line with the diamond marker represents the ratio of AG's rate of falling above each point to DG's rate of falling above the point. Ratio A, I've termed it. It reflects the relative difference between rates of experiencing the favorable outcome. And notice that as we move from left to right and favorable outcomes become more common, relative differences between success rates tend to decline. Let me add here that I use the rate of the advantage group as the numerator, whereas the disparities report always uses the disadvantage group's rate as the numerator. Did I say it? Well, numerator is what I meant to say. And I've tended to use that myself. The choice of numerator will have a small effect on the size of the disparity, that is, whether we call a difference between 80 and 60 a 33% or 25% difference. But this is immaterial to the point I make here. But I do use the advantage group's rate as the numerator here because of a pattern to be illustrated in the next few slides. Next, we examine the other side of the picture, the relative difference between rates of experiencing the adverse outcome. Figure 2 adds to the first figure a red line with a box marker which represents the ratio of DG's failure rate to AG's failure rate at each point, termed here ratio B. And here we see that as we move from left to right and adverse outcomes become less common, relative differences in experiencing the outcomes increase. Thus, we observe how relative differences in experiencing an outcome and relative differences in avoiding the outcome tend to move systematically in opposite directions as the prevalence of the outcome changes. If that seems a little counterintuitive to some, others will realize that the second pattern is implied in the first. In fact, is simply the mirror image of the first pattern. Figure 3 adds the odds ratio, the yellow line with the triangle marker. When the favorable outcome is quite rare, the odds ratio is quite large. As the favorable outcome becomes more common, the odds ratio declines, reaching a low at approximately the intersection of the declining ratio of success rates, ratio A, and increasing ratio of failure rates, ratio B. I'm not going to give a great deal of attention to odds ratios, but several of the references explore its problematic nature in health disparities research. The next figure adds a chartreuse line at the bottom, and this is the absolute difference. And observe that it acts in exactly the opposite way of the odds ratio. It reaches a high point at approximately the intersection of ratios A and B. It doesn't really belong on this chart because it's a different type of measure and a different scale, but I've included it here simply to show how it interacts with the other ratios. Here's a better picture of the way the absolute difference tends to change as the prevalence of the outcome changes. Now, these patterns can be shown in all sorts of other data. Data on income data, as in the Chance article I referenced, show how as you lower, as poverty declines, relative differences in poverty rates increase, relative differences in rates of avoiding poverty decline. NHANES data show how as we improve management, say, of high blood pressure, racial differences in the management of high blood pressure will decline, while racial differences in the failure to manage high blood pressure will increase. I say do it yourself with regard to the Framingham calculator, because you can go online and choose your advantage and disadvantage group. Women versus men, non-smokers versus smokers with regard to heart attacks, and just vary the other variables and see how the patterns of risks of heart attacks and non-heart attacks change more or less in accord with the patterns I've shown here. Next three slides I'm going to skip over very quickly because they simply illustrate concretely some of the points I'm trying to show. And I assume that this presentation will be available on e-learning and on my website, and these are fairly self-explanatory. The first is simply that caught my attention, the post on Sunday. It's the classic situation where improving education reduces racial disparities in proficiency, but increasing racial disparities and failure to meet proficiency standards. Next slide is an article where two studies in the same issue of the New England Journal of Medicine found absolute differences to move in different directions, even as where both in both cases the prevalence of the favorable outcome was increasing. And this was because in one case the ranges were over on the left side of that initial figure I showed, and in the other they were over on the right side of the initial figure. And at the bottom I give a couple of references that explore that at quite some considerable length. Illustration based on rates of hemodialysis. I cite that because it's an article where the author found that as hemodialysis adequacy rates increased, absolute differences between blacks and whites declined, and that's been often cited, including by AHRQ officials, as it's showing how improvements in health reduce racial disparities. But if you looked at it in terms of racial disparities and failure to have adequate dialysis, those increased according to the data in the Siegel study. So, varied implications of measurement in terms of relative differences in adverse outcomes. Well, as healthcare and health improve, disparities will seem to increase. I've already said that. Next, most effective measures, even ones seemingly focused on the disadvantage, will seem to increase disparities. See item D3 regarding the impact of a very successful back-to-sleep program. Disparities will seem to be largest in areas or among subpopulations where adverse outcomes are rarest. I have several references here, and one of the interesting ones is that for a long time, the relatively egalitarian societies in Norway and Sweden have been under the impression that they have particularly large disparities. And a reason for these seemingly large disparities in mortality rates in these countries is simply that they are very healthy countries. Also, disparities tend to be largest with respect to adverse outcomes that are rarest. This is also pertinent to the National Healthcare Qualities Report, which measures variance across states in terms of relative differences in adverse outcomes. And so you're going to find the largest disparities to be where with regard to the conditions where these adverse outcomes are rarest. Now, none of these tendencies are the whole story in any situation that you look at, save in my hypothetical up there. But these tendencies are always an important part of the story. And you really can't address the story of whether disparities are changing over time without consideration. So which measure is best? Well, none really can alone indicate whether a disparity is changing other than solely as a consequence of changes in prevalence. Further, each measure can change in one direction even when there is in fact a meaningful change in the opposite direction. Now, I should say I am kind of partial to absolute differences because they quantify the extent to which a disadvantaged group is harmed by its relatively disadvantaged position. And also, I kind of like relative differences in favorable outcomes because I'm by trade an employment discrimination lawyer, and nothing is more written in stone than to reduce the racial impact of a test. You lower the cutoff, which reduces disparities in success rates, though it increases disparities in failure rates. Notwithstanding those kind of intuitive preferences of mine, I still have to say none of the measures is really telling you a true story without trying to take these tendencies into account. Also, be mindful that favorable outcomes are not always increasing. Sometimes it's the unfavorable one that's increasing, obesity, for example. And when we observe in such situations that relative differences in those adverse outcomes are declining, we are not really seeing something that we should regard as something favorable. Can we actually measure health or healthcare disparities? Well, I treat these issues at some length in several of these articles, and with regard to dichotomous measures, the key is to try and find departures from the patterns I described. And all I can say, it's not so easy to do. And an objection to the things I say is that, well, disparities are always going to be as normal as I presented them in that figure, which is absolutely true, but they're not going to be so. But that doesn't mean that we can fail to take these patterns into account. What it does mean, however, is that departures from the normal make it difficult for us to try and make judgments about changes over time while taking those distributions that we cannot actually see into account. Continuous variables, I explore possibilities, and there may be some possibilities in like allostatic load where the issues I raise don't really create a problem for identifying changes over time. But smoking is always an additional complication because it simply is a dichotomy. It's going to change in these difficult patterns of smoking are going to change in these difficult to interpret ways. Supposing then we see a change in continuous variables that seems like a real change but simply is attributable to the difficult to interpret change in smoking patterns, then I don't know really what we found. I'll skip the last point there and simply conclude by saying that if you're persuaded by what I say here, you'll see that the most important thing in the study of health disparities is the study of a way to measure health disparities that's really identifying changes that are other than dictated by or influenced by changes in the overall prevalence of an outcome. Thank you.